Now.
What? Good Monday morning. Here comes my daughter, you guys. Here comes my daughter. But good Monday morning, everyone. We hope that you guys are having a fantastic Monday.
And four dogs and three cats come in with them.
Anyways, if you're not watching us live, go on over to our Facebook and YouTube channels because my daughter's a
Amy
big
feeds
riot.
Her daughter whipped cream.
I was going to say. And,
no. Oh, my God. Okay. Anyways, you guys are listening
whipped
to
cream.
With me, Amy Russell, and Dina, and our lovely guest today is Dr. Catherine Hayes. So, you guys. Hey, let's dive into the weekend while my kid's here because that makes it all the more fun. So this weekend, me and Josh kind of separated the kids this weekend.
I've been predicting this was going to happen.
Not
the way you're thinking,
not
Russell.
Not like that, Russell. Oh, my God. So what we did was he took one with him to the grocery store, so I didn't have to go this weekend. And I took my oldest one, who's not the one that's here, we walked to the park so she could ride her bike. And then we went and had a picnic, just me and her, because she's been dying for mommy and me time is how she calls it. So, yes. And you want to come with me. So that's generally what we did. We went and drove by the house to check the progress of the house. It's been fun. We're all excited and going on about that. But while I indulge my child, I'm going to let all of you guys talk about your weekends. So, Russell, do you want to go first?
Yes, put the picture up.
Okay,
so I saw this picture this weekend. This is Amy, everyone. And everyone that watches this show will know this is Amy. This is a coffee cup that says, I am not responsible for what my face does when you talk. This is Amy. She has no poker face, Dr. Catherine. When you're talking, if she thinks you're full of crap, you can see it all over her face. And that's happened before, and I have had to hide my laughter till we get off the show because, oh, my God. And we need to get Amy this coffee cup.
Russell.
Yeah, I love it. Oh, my gosh.
I have a great poker face. I don't know what you're talking about.
You have no poker face.
It's perfect.
Okay, this was my weekend. Everyone, I'm in Houston for the weekend. I live in Atlanta, but I'm in Houston for the weekend. We lost a family member last week, so we're in. And as the lawyer of the family, so I'm doing the family business, right? That's my job. So we come in this weekend, and my wife decides she's going to invite our two-year-old twin granddaughters and our five-year-old granddaughter to spend the night with us in our hotel room. Oh, my God. I was so scared. So we did that, and it turned out great because they're all great, good little girls. And the next morning, we got them up. We fed them. We took them home, and they have been sick for the last 24 hours. We may never be allowed around our granddaughters.
What did you do? All those poor babies.
I don't know.
Russell, them poor babies.
Did you feed them whipped cream?
Not like, no.
Not
yeah, not like Amy. No, I don't know if Amy's feeding the kid the whipped cream, that dog that came in with the kid the whipped cream, or both of them. I don't know.
I'm not judging because it's a good source of calcium.
There you go.
I'm
yes. And it's not open
it
yet.
It makes me happy.
Oh,
here she comes for some more whipped cream.
I like how she made it 7 seconds into the show before she made her appearance.
Right.
Did anyone have 7 seconds on the betting pool?
No. What'd you two do for your weekends?
I worked this weekend.
I know. You've done some work for me, too. That's very impressive.
So I did a lot of work this weekend. So.
Oh, wow.
Yes. No weekend for me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's because of me. No. I know. I owe Dina. Big hugs. Big
okay.
Hugs.
Yes, I was cussing Miss Amy all weekend long. No,
okay.
No. I wasn't cussing her.
But since she separated from her husband, probably he was cussing her too.
It was his idea. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I
suggested
that Josh a present. So I sent Josh a present. So, yeah, we won't talk about that. I got him some blackjack gum, which
it's all gone, by the way. My kids got into it and it's all gone.
And if blackjack gum tastes like licorice, black licorice.
It does.
That doesn't sound good.
I love blackjack gum. I love black licorice. That's I got like 25 pounds of black licorice for Christmas. So the organic licorice, not the, you know, Twizzler crap.
That's too much.
So that's I love it. Oh my God, it was so good. I had to hide it from my oldest son or my middle son because he likes it. But the other kids, they're like, no, I don't want to get that away from me.
That's no.
One stick is too much.
Nope.
What'd you do, doctor?
Dr. Catherine, what did you do?
We had my husband and I, well, we had a really exciting weekend. We had a friend give her husband a surprise birthday party in Augusta. We used to live there. And we drove the 5 hours there Friday. And it was kind of a turn and burn. And then we had to get back Saturday. And I worked too, Dina. I understand. I was working in the car on the drive there and then back. It was like a little office in the car. But we were so happy to celebrate with our friends, our friend's birthday. And then we came back Saturday because we had game night. One of my daughters is dating someone new, and he arranged a huge game night for our family, and we're really competitive. So it was epic. Yes, I won big. I have to say I won big.
Yes, you did. I love that he organized it. That's great.
That's a good idea to get to know the parents. That's a great idea. Of course, I could never do that with our family because our family's a little wild, little obnoxious, and plates will fly. So yeah. We don't let new people in often.
Oh my goodness. No, I mean, no. Russell, go.
Yes, I need to thank the people that are listening to us on our podcast. Most people listen to us during the week. They don't watch us on Monday morning when we do this live. They listen to us while they're driving, they're working out, and we want to thank them for it. We're top 10 independent book podcast in America, and we are humbled to be able to say that. Amy, you fixed it where even someone is stupid when it comes to finding channels on podcast as me can find it. Where can they find us?
I don't know if you're stupid. We're just challenged.
I felt that way when I was looking for it the first year.
No. Okay. Anyway, so you guys can find us anywhere that you can find and listen to a podcast. Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, Good Pods, several others that I know I'm not naming. Those are just the common ones that I've looked for podcasts. So those are the ones that I'm naming today. But make sure you go and look for the Crimson Red and Gold because, yes, I was selfish and those are my favorite and I did that. And Dina's the one that actually updated and created our logo, Russell. So make sure that you go and listen up. All of our episodes from our 8 years are uploaded on there. Also, they're on our YouTube channel, on our Author Talk Facebook group, and any one of our public social media channels. You can always jump in. We like to listen and engage with you guys during our show. And like that cup says, I control what comes out of my mouth, but not my facial expressions. And I am generally pretty animated. I talk a lot with my hands. My kids pop in and make their own cameo appearance because they know just when you hit that go live button for whatever reason, they happen to just know that. But we are incredibly humble and grateful. We have had the most fun doing this, which was Russell's idea to start this to begin with. We've met incredible authors, publishers, others within the writing community and had so much fun doing it and learned so much in the process and kind of helped all of us evolve within the author and writing community of which all of us contribute and play a part in for sure. But without further ado, let's get Dr. Catherine talking about her latest and upcoming novel that's coming out in February and some other works that she may also have. So Dina, take it away.
Okay, so I was reading the synopsis of your book. It's a fifth of the story is the book. When is it supposed to be released?
February 27th.
Okay, I'm really excited for it because this book is right in my wheelhouse of stuff that I read.
Okay.
So I like
to, you're not a chick flick kind of a girl.
No, not anymore. I used to be like all romance, you know, all bodice rippers. And then, I don't know, I got away from that.
Okay, so good.
I read, you know, blowing up the world, all terrorism and cop thrillers. So,
okay, yeah.
So tell me about the book. Tell everyone else about the book.
Yeah, so the book, it starts off pretty action-packed. It starts off in Africa, and there are three friends who are in the CIA, and they're on this mission. And although it's successful, there's some things go wrong, and unfortunately, innocent civilians are killed. And they have to answer to that, to the director, when they get back home. And with an interesting twist of events, she offers them the opportunity to segue into the FBI. And that's not unusual. Sometimes agents from different intelligence agencies will go back and forth. And but it is actually to uncover a breach in the intel agency, which we've been seeing more and more in the United States, which is terrifying. And so as they're segueing into the FBI, a horrible incident happens that is definitely targeted, and it almost kills one of the three friends. And then the main character, Brock O'Reilly, he is in a fight of his life to protect him and his, not just his friend, not just his friend's integrity, but his family. And they're like two little children involved, the wife, the mother. And as he's working to protect this family, more and more unfolds. It's not really just about them. It's about an attack against the American democracy. So it's terrifying because there are things that I think about that could really happen here in our country. And it's just putting our characters into these real life scenarios and see what happens.
This is like right up my wheelhouse, and you're absolutely correct. There is so much, not the interaction between the different agencies, but I just read an article this weekend about one FBI agent who had for 25 years been selling secrets to a Russian oligarch. Right. So, yeah. I mean, it's very timely. So, well, do you have I thought I read that you had your BA and all of your credentials, your education credentials are actually in education. Do you have any kind of a background in, I'm not going to ask if you're CIA or NSA or FBI, but
no. Oh, I wish. My goodness. What was I thinking when I chose my career path?
No, you don't. No, you don't wish. You wouldn't.
No, I live vicariously through my spouse. And so my spouse did almost a 25-year stint more with the DIA, which is, for people who are not in the military, it would be like the military form of the CIA. And he's worked in the intelligence agency. In fact, when I met him, I was a school principal, and he was running the schoolhouse for intelligence in Fort Huachuca, and that's in Arizona. So it's really having an in into some of the things that he sees, and he's allowed to share with me. There are things that are declassified, which some things I'm like, I don't even know why it's declassified. It seems I don't know if that's, if they should be sharing this with the world, but you'd be surprised what is declassified and what we writers could just have a field day with that information, just going over those files. So yeah. It was really, yeah. So there were actual missions that he had been on or I knew about, or things that were declassified. And I created these scenarios by, of course, stripping away names, the time and place, but some of the scenarios were real, which is terrifying. If you read the book, you're like, wow, stuff like this could really happen or has happened. Yeah.
Yeah. I've read some, and you know, about the global terrorism. I'm like, you know, this could actually happen. I mean, this is like really close. There's like a hair's difference between fact and fiction on some of the stuff.
Right. Yeah.
So, but your book sounds extremely interesting. I'm definitely going to get that.
Yeah. I hope so.
And who's it published by?
It's published by Endgame Press. They're a new publisher. They started in 2019, but they're very progressive, very motivated. They did an excellent job with the cover and just the book in general.
The cover is beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. I was pleased with it. Yeah.
So, and how did you come up with the title, A Fifth of the Story?
So this book has been in the making for a while. I actually had like 90,000 words of hot garbage, but the premise stayed the same. Yeah. You hear all the time, you hear about author, they'll say, hey, you know, your first book probably won't get published and it's probably going to be a learning lesson. And I thought, that's just going to be other people. I'm going to defy the odds. Well, I didn't defy the odds. at all. I look back and I try to think maybe I can salvage some part of the book, and it's pretty bad. So, but the premise was incredible and it just wouldn't leave me alone. It haunted me. And so the premise is people think, oh, there are two sides to a story. Although say there are three sides to a story. But I say, no, there's five. So there's what you see, what I see, what others see. They're the facts, and there's what God sees and what he thinks about it. And the premise is if you live for that one fifth of what God sees and what he thinks about it, you will live a good life. And so I have to tell you, though, my main character is not, he's not a Christian. He's searching for faith. There are lots of things that have really shaken his faith and his belief in the existence of God. And so he does a lot of soul searching, a lot of conversations about, why am I here? What is my purpose? And why have these things happened to me? So he does lots of soul searching. So that's a premise. That's why I have it as a fifth of the story.
Well, I love the color, the cover. That's gripping in itself. So, and the storyline just from, and I'm not going to lie, when I first saw the character's name, Brock O'Reilly, I thought of Brock O'Hearn, you know, the dude who used to do all of those book covers. I'm sorry. Amy and Russell. No, they're going to furiously go over there and search Brock.
Hey, don't be telling my secrets and putting me on blast. Like, I'm... was in the process. Now I'm not going to because you called me out.
Do it.
I like to feel like I'm in the know of the conversation, though I have no idea.
Well, I can tell that you and Russell didn't know because you both had like this trying to act interested faces. And they're like once again, Dina's talking about something we have no clue. Just like the whole thing with Bosch that I went on last time I was on.
Let's not get back on Bosch again.
So, well, did your husband read the book and, you know, was he supportive in the way that, you know, you'd crank out a chapter and you'd like give it to him and say, okay, tell me, is this feasible? I mean, cause you've got like a built in technical expert who's going to fact check you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I will tell you that, and I hope there are other readers that they really can understand this. I understand my family is not my tribe in terms of reading my stuff, right? Okay. There are two books that my family, I know that they haven't even looked through it. Okay. And I just have to leave it where it's at. They love me. They support me. They're there for me. And my husband, no, he just did not read that book cover to cover, period. Not going to happen. But he did vet everything that needed to be vet, and he was instrumental, both him and my mentor, because my mentor is a guy, ensuring that I stayed true to form in terms of how men interact with each other. That's really important. I'm pretty good at it because I had brothers, but there are things that we do get wrong. You know, I my husband was like, stop having them hug it out. Okay, that's not going to happen. The guys are not going to hug it out. Or they're not going to talk that long, Catherine. They're not talking in complete sentences. Men are just, they're really crass. I'm like, really? And so there's some crass.
You know, those are all true. That's really true, what you said.
And they,
I don't know. I'm not that crass, but I don't speak, when I'm around other men, I don't really talk and I don't really speak in complete sentences that often because you're not that interested in each other.
As the mother of two sons, they don't have conversations. They grunt, they punch, and they scratch.
Yeah, and they insult each other, even when they like each other. So I was like, well, that's fascinating. So,
oh, no, I do that.
And when I say crass, I'm not, I do write pretty true to who I am. I'm not a big cusser. It's not, that's not something that I don't really write with a lot of cuss words. But it's, but you can be crass without doing that. And it's just the way that they speak to each other. I'm like, some of this stuff I say is, it's like, wow. But it's how guys speak to each other. Thoroughly vetted by my husband. He's like, especially military guys and those CIA, FBI guys, that they're kind of raunchy.
So, yeah. And they all have the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, what is that about?
I don't know, because I have the same problem. So I can't really say anything about it. I kind of do too.
So it's not that far-fetched. It's very sad. People often ask me, when am I going to grow up? And hopefully never. Why? Yeah. So boring.
Yeah. Well, there's just something so hilarious about fart jokes. So,
so can I ask a question, Dina? This is important. So did you consider it a real challenge to write from a male perspective? Because I got to tell you, in one of my novels, the whole point of the novel was the challenge of writing from a female perspective. And I thought it was pretty difficult.
Yeah. There were times where it was difficult. Just because of the way men process things and how they react to different things. I really had to allow, you know, my instincts from being around men and listening to what my husband said and my mentor say, I had to let that take over. And after a while, your character becomes alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so after a while, I know this may sound crazy to other people, but I really got to know who Brock was. And so it became more instinctive after a while. But I get
what you're saying. Yeah, he wouldn't have done this. He wouldn't have said this. He wouldn't have thought this way.
Right. That
the more you flesh him out, the more that they become three-dimensional characters versus one-dimensional synopsis.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was your writing style and like writing process like? Because I can only imagine you had to kind of have your husband read over to make sure it sounded legit and how that was. So how long did it take you to write this book cover to cover? And then what's your writing style like? Because everyone's writing style is different. So what was
being everybody's different. So I had a publisher who was interested in this book, and I thought I was just going to have it edited and then send it in. But when I ended up working with the mentor, I shelved that whole book, the one I told you that's kind of hot garbage. And I ended up writing a book on the fly in about 10 months. To some people that might seem like really slow, others, I don't know, maybe fast. I'm not sure, but
I think it's very fast.
You really? Okay. Yes. I was really hard on myself, but I wrote almost every single day, at least 1500 words.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, about that. And, I do have a whole ritual. I light candles. I have certain music that I play. I have my my drinks that I like, my snacks, and I'm really locked in. But I create this whole kind of atmosphere for myself, mm-hmm. In my office, and so I don't know if other people do that, but that's pretty much.
Did your soundtrack change depending on what you were writing? Like if you were writing like an action scene, did you go to like, I don't know, techno rave music
So this is really weird. This book wanted to listen to Gregory Porter. I don't know if you even know who Gregory Porter is, but I just love him. Gregory Porter is this kind of jazz artist. He kind of has this bluesy sound, and he's just got a beautiful, soothing voice, and the lyrics to his songs are just thought provoking. And so, for whatever reason, that book was written to mostly Gregory Porter.
Yeah. His soundtrack fueled your creative juices.
Yeah, I just felt like I felt like Brock would have been really into Gregory Porter. Gregory Porter is kind of a class. He's a black guy. He used to play professional football and suffered an injury. And then he leaned into his what he was really gifted at, and that was singing. And his career took off after you know how that seems, sudden success of you working for 20 years at it.
Yeah, over compensation after 30 years of plugging away.
But he's classy. He wears like his ascot, you know, and he has this cap he's known to wear. You never see his head. He wears this special cap, and he's kind of real classy. He's got this very classy jazz band. I just felt like Brock, even though he's a tough guy, there's something classy about him that would be really dig Gregory.
Like a James Bond. James Bond's a classy guy, but he's like not afraid to, you know, dodge bullets. Right. I'm a huge James Bond fan, so that's why.
So about watered down martini.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I'm down for that. I like the older ones though, you know, like the Sean Connery, Pierce Brosnan. Yeah. Those ones, I don't know why. Roger Moore to me had like the most like suave. I love
okay. Sean you Connery. Can't say you like Sean Connery and Roger Moore.
I those do. Like I like him for different reasons.
Diametrically opposed. That's ridiculous.
No, Sean Connery was like a macho man, like blah, blah, blah. You know, and he was kind of, you know, looking back at it now, he was definitely an alpha male. I don't support that he was kind of aggressive with women. That's not what I'm saying. But Roger Moore just had like this swag, and you're just like, oh, like take me in your arms. Like, I don't know. I just love both of them for different reasons.
Yeah, I agree, Amy. I agree.
Yeah, Russ.
No, see, Sean Connery, Scottish.
I know. I understand that. So I'm dying to know. I always ask like pretty much like I always call them like the basic questions, but I like to know because Sandy Lawrence is one that was on this show originally with Russell, and she always says there's a story behind the story, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the question I'm going to ask you. What is the story behind this book? How did this book and this thought and the idea of this book kind of come about? We were just like, you know what? That's a damn good idea, and I'm going to write this book, and I'm going to just feed my husband's going to tell me that this is the right direction to go. So what was that for you?
Well, I love that. Oh, man, I love that question. Yeah, you're right. There is a story behind every story. You know, what I was examining it's really like a self-exploration about relationships. My family and friends are really important to me. Relationships, I really treasure them. And, you know, there are times when breaking up with a friend, like a girlfriend, was tougher than breaking up with, you know, getting a divorce. Mm-hmm. And because those relationships are so powerful and so you're so close to this person. And so I was really examining themes of loyalty, what it means to be loyal. How far do we go to be loyal to other people? And also themes about, you know, examining our God, that's my faith is very important to me. So examining that and being very transparent, like I, as a person of faith, I have questions all the time. I have doubts, I have fears, and right. that's all there in the book. And then also there's always part of us that we want to be noticed. We want to be treasured. And so in that book, there is that my protagonist really, he really battles with a lot of those different things. And then it plays out in his interaction with people in the book. And then of course, our fears, our fear of death, our fear of losing people who we really love. And that book really was something else to me, because during the writing of that book, my brother and my mom died, and they died 8 weeks apart. And I never stopped writing. In fact, the night my mom died, I came home and I wrote probably one of the most powerful chapters in the book. And it was real. What was happening was not, it wasn't my mother's story, but the pain, right. the emotion, it was poured. I took that pain and I poured it into that chapter. And I feel it was a blessing that I had that book to write, because people were saying, well, are you going to shelve that for now? Are you going to put that to the side? I'm like, no, it gives me, it actually energizes me to write more.
So it was like an outlet for you during those, you know, tough times, you know, 8 weeks apart. That's a lot. And so it almost seems like it was like an outlet for you to kind of channel all that pain and everything that you were experiencing during that time. And right, like you said, the most powerful scenes in it. See, when Mickey sends me books that are upcoming, it really makes me mad, because I'm like, damn it, I want to read the book. I've talked to the author. I know the behind the story. I really want to do this. But your book is available for pre-order. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's available for pre-order at the Endgame website, which is just www.endgamepress.com. And then it's also available at Barnes & Noble. .com and on Amazon, all the places, and on my website.
Nice. See, I love that. And I feel like pre-orders are one of those things that are important if you're searching out like editorial reviews and just kind of shopping it around to get a feel of how people and audiences are going to react, right? Both good and bad. You need good and bad, in my opinion. So Catherine, you don't know this. I am the only writer or not writer on this call. So I have not written a book. I have no intention of writing a book. I'm going to live vicariously through all of you, and all of you write different genres. So it's happy day for me. But from a marketing standpoint, having a pre-order is fabulous. So kudos to you and your publishing team. And we heard about your publishing journey. So what is next for you? Is this going to be a book that you're going to turn into a series? Are you going to continue to write these kinds of books within this genre? What's next for you?
Yeah, it's a series. There are 5 books in this series. The second book is already finished.
Nice.
And so I'm actually working on the third and fourth books right now. They're in the outline process. A few chapters are etched out. So my writing, as soon as this book is released, I'm starting aggressively on my own writing schedule. So I'm excited to continue the story. There's so much that needs to be said. The character, you know how it is, Russell and Dina, when these characters scream out to you. My second book, the second book in the series, I didn't think it would happen. But a secondary character wanted to be, you know, part of the action. Yeah. So she got her own book.
Did she did you have a character talk to you in one of your dreams yet?
Yes. I'm so glad that you're admitting this. Okay. Yes. I do. I dream about my characters.
Right.
Yes. I think about them. I miss them. Like, I really miss my characters since I haven't been writing them. And I'll just say to my family at the dinner table, man, I miss Patty. I really miss Andrew. I wonder what they're up to. They're like, wait a minute, you're not talking about your book characters again, are you? I'm like, yeah. I mean, and in fact, I think they would enjoy the steak. They're like, we can't do this with you.
So, well, I'm a fan of series. That's what I'll read above anything else. If there's like, you know, 5, 6, 20, 50 books in a series. So Yeah, because you've already spent book one building a relationship with the character, right? From a reader's point of view.
Yeah.
And then so, yeah, I mean, I want to know what happens next other than just, you know, the 3,000 word epilogue, you know.
Exactly.
Give me some meat, you know, let me know. Did they fight because he wakes up with morning breath or what? You know, what else is going on?
Yeah, Dina. Yeah, Dina. This comes to you. So I, Catherine, like you, and you talk about your characters at the dinner table. Dina knows this because I have read Dina's book that she has not released yet. And I called her because I couldn't put it down. And I chewed her out because she left me on a cliffhanger and hasn't written book number two. So from a reader standpoint, we get invested in your characters too. And we get upset when we can't finish this story. So much like you, I understand your pain. I understand.
And in my defense, I wrote the book in 2016.
Oh my goodness.
And still haven't written, you know.
I'm just saying. So a reader standpoint, you know, like y'all authors, you and Russell dream about your characters. Us readers don't necessarily do it. I haven't done that. But we do kind of, when I finish a really good book that I couldn't put down, you know, that I've read probably in a couple hours, I do find myself similar to you and like missing them and wondering, oh, like what's going to happen? Like, I can't believe this happened. I feel so bad for her. My heart's breaking. And it's like, you've built this like friendship with these people that aren't real. Right. And it sounds crazy. And I know it sounds crazy, but we're all a little crazy in this world is how I've described it. And so you're amongst friends. So
I actually have had dreams about like, I've read all of the In Death series by J.D. Robb, read them all about five times. And I have had dreams about, you know, that world. You know, not just the characters, but the whole, because it's like futuristic, you know, flying cars, stuff like that, you know. So, yeah, that has been incorporated into some of my dreams, but I have weird dreams anyway. So I don't know if it's that or if it's, you know, because the books, they do stick with you. And that's what matters, is if you hit that connection with the reader when you're writing, you know, because it hits you as a writer, but the goal is to hit the reader that way, and it's hit and miss.
Yes.
I actually had a character, one of my main characters, actually, I dreamed that this character came to me and said, "You have my name wrong. That's not my name. My name is this." And so the next morning I told my wife, I just dreamed. And Marilyn told me I got her name wrong and that her name was Marilyn. And my wife said, "You're creeping me out. Don't talk to me for a while."
You're creeping me out. Oh, my
God. That, Russell, though, because I had that with my main character,
his name
was Tim forever. And you're right. He didn't come to me in a dream, though, but I was writing and he was like, I am too interesting to be Tim. I'm no hating on Tims now. I love Tims, but this.
Well, maybe a little hate, not much. Just a little hate.
Just a borderline.
Yeah. I get it.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No. People wouldn't appreciate that. So I do have another question. And this is do you get to have reviews written on your pre-sales? How does that work? And when do you start gathering reviews of your book? Do you know?
So I'm in the process of gathering reviews right now. I'm grateful for my publicist, Mickey Mickelson, a very hardworking guy. So he's already gotten me reviews. And also, I sent out the book to beta readers. And so they actually, on my website, you can see that there are endorsements and feedback already. So it's something that you work with through your publisher, through a publicist, if you're fortunate to have one, and even on your own. I think that I've really begun working after the book was picked up. In fact, I prefer to just be writing, but the marketing part is
you can't just write. You can't just write. If you just write, then you're invisible.
Right. So you can't just write. And so it's just a lot of work.
Mickey hadn't sent it to me or asked me if I wanted to read it.
What?
I'm going to have to send Mickey a little snarky email.
It's not out yet. It's not out yet.
She said that he's sending it out for reviews.
I know. So, okay. Let's wrap up this review question in a nutshell, right? So if you're searching for editorial reviews, you want to send them out between 6 and 4 months. Some editorial reviews like Library Journal want 6 months, Publishers Weekly, the rest of them really want 4 months. So you have to hit that window and it has to be up for launch date before you submit. So it needs to be 6 months out and you have to do that before you submit for reviews. And it still isn't a guarantee if you submit for editorial reviews, right? That is like a disclaimer that comes. Yeah. Now, when you're sending out to smaller reviewers, beta reviewers, all of those things, you kind of vet them as to the ones you're going to go with bigger audiences before launch date. So that way it helps draw up buzz and attention on bigger platforms and that'll draw up pre-orders and those kinds of things. Once the book comes out, then you kind of target everyone else and their mother in that direction. Once your book comes out, because it already will have these bigger reviews from bigger names and hopefully editorial reviews and bigger blurbs and those kinds of things. So it's a 6 month campaign just for reviews. And then after that, it goes into what I like to call a free-for-all or the gauntlet, which is everyone that wants to review that likes this book gets this book, right? Like, yes, let's draw up reviews on Amazon and all of those things. Because everybody knows that if you hit X amount of reviews, it used to be 25. I'm not sure if it's 50 or still 25 anymore.
I think it's more than 50 now.
It might be. It might be closer to 75. But between 25 and 75 reviews, Amazon will begin marketing your book for you and newsletters and those kinds of things, which is what a lot of people want. Yeah. So in order to do that, you have to have those reviews. Also, if you're going to run some kind of promotions on your book, some promotional sites will want X amount of reviews and an X amount of star ratings before they will even consider reviewing or promoting your book, right? So that's the whole review marketing thing in a nutshell. That's incredibly difficult and takes authors away from writing, and it's not very fun. Yeah. But
Andy said that really fast and used a lot of words.
I use a lot of words. I can be wordy sometimes, but it's not necessarily the funnest thing to do, but you can feel empowered to do the marketing and all that yourself if you don't have the option of having a publicist. So keep that in mind. You can always do things yourself. It just takes away from writing, right? And those, it's a trade-off. Everything in life has a trade-off is my motto, and that just is one of those things that happens. But there's your review question in a nutshell answered, Russell.
Yeah. And if you're fortunate to be with a larger publisher, they have way more access in getting things reviewed like 6 months out and all of that. I was able to get into Publishers Weekly, but I wasn't able to get into the Library Journal. So there's that.
Yeah, it definitely, it's a trade-off and you have to know what you're getting into, right? And not set, this sounds really negative and it's not me negative. Don't set your expectations so high because if it doesn't happen, then it discourages you and you will no longer want to write, right? And I encounter those conversations quite frequently and it's like, just write and get your book out. We will cross these bridges and hurdles as they come, but don't let it deter you because ultimately you're kind of writing for yourself and to get these things out from in there, right? So that would be my two cents.
A lot of people see, oh, well, this person did it this way. It's not a cookie cutter process for anyone. You know, just like your writing journey is your own journey that you do on your own. And, you know, there's certain things you do this and then you do this and then you do this, but there's a multitude of little offshoots along the way that change your direction.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, all right. Amy's grading.
Okay, Dr. Catherine. So one last time, tell everybody where they can go and pre-order your book, A Fifth of the Story, because I'm already on that to do that. I'm notorious for that. But where can everybody else go? And if they want to kind of reach out to you to book you on other shows, how can they go about doing that?
Yeah, I love to interact with people. I'm a real people person. So come on, guys. Come on and hang out with me at drkatherine, Hayes.com, Dr. Catherine Hayes.com. All the things are there. And then if you'd love to, if you'd like to pre-order, you can pre-order it at the publisher's website, which is endgamepress.com. And then you can also pre-order it at barnesandnoble.com and also Amazon.
Nice. I love it. Well, let's do closing questions, comments, statements. Dina, you first. Russell, then you.
I don't have anything.
All right.
Have a great weekend. Have a great week.
Russell does.
So my last thing is when you said your reading tribe and your family tribe were not the same tribe, I totally identified with that. I think that you and I are the same type of people. Our characters discuss things with us at night. Our family's creeped out about the fact that we think of these people the way we do. And our family is not a part of sometimes our reading tribe, which really bugs me, but it's a fact. And when you said it, I identified with you. Good luck on your book. And I hope you get great reviews.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's great to be among friends who are like-minded. I appreciate it. And Amy, thank you so much for sharing that about reviews. That's really important. Yeah, I appreciate
it. Anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime. Well, you all, we hope that you all have a fantastic Monday, a great rest of your day. But until next Monday, bye for now, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.